Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 146, week 12 in the SEC. Recorded Wednesday, November 19th, 2014. This week, the roundtable goes off-site, but manages to get the podcast recorded with only slight technical difficulties. They still manage, however, to look at a great set of games from last week. And that's the good news. The bad news is that they had to look at the slate of games set up for this week. And there's very little to be excited about there. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey. We are almost through with the regular season of football. So, you know, I was thinking as we were getting ready to do this podcast that, you know, we just won't worry about these last couple of weeks. It's basketball season in my world. You know, my team had a tremendous showing last night, so I think it's time to switch to basketball and forget that other sport that dominates the SEC. Of course,
that 13 SEC teams would disagree, unfortunately.
That is a joke, of course. We will talk football. Sometimes, especially after last week's performance, I'd like to forget that football does exist for Kentucky. But, you know, we do have basketball season to look forward to as Kentucky fans, and last night's Kansas domination was really, really encouraging on that front. But, you know, we do have a couple more weeks of football to look at, and we have a whole, you know, 4 weeks of downtime between the bowl season and then bowl season starts. And so we've still got a lot of football left in us. That tank is nowhere close to being empty. So we are right there in the middle of it. A lot of great action on the field of play last week, and we're going to discuss that. We normally always discuss the week ahead. That's going to be a quick look. I think my co-hosts would agree that there's certain situations that there's not going to be a lot of discussion that needs to occur in some of those games that we have coming up this Saturday. So we will. There are a couple of games of note, so there will be some discussion for this week. But we look at the week that was, we look at the week that is, and we do that from a fan's perspective. I already let you know that I'm a Kentucky fan. Joining me tonight, we have an Arkansas fan, Jimmy Penrod. Welcome. It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, good to be back.
Well, we're glad to have you. And then we've also got Britton Burton, our Alabama regular.
That's right, and things are back the way they should be. Alabama's number one again. Everything's right with the world.
Yeah, when Alabama's number one, everything's right in your world.
Yeah.
You know, Saban said not to worry. Things will work themselves out as the season progresses, and that happens. So we'll take a look at that. If you just are figuring this out, we talk SEC sports. That's why it's SEC Sports Roundtable. We do this every week, and we do it via YouTube, Google Hangouts. We do it on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you can get an audio podcast. You can go out there and check those out as well. So we'd love to have you come out and listen and talk to us. Find us on Twitter, SECSRT. If you enter those six letters in on the Internet search bar, whatever you use, you'll probably find what you need and how you want to interact and listen to us. So go out there and do that. We'd appreciate it. So, you know, got a little Missouri love this week, and you know, those guys have just silently continued to do what they need to do week after week after week after week, except for Indiana, you know, but for the most part, they've done what they need to do and really control their own destiny. And we're going to see what happens with that program moving forward. But you know, right now they still get to control what's left of the East. Couple big matchups for them, so we'll talk about that. But you know, first and foremost, let's look at the biggest news. I don't know if it's the biggest news. There was a lot of news this week. You know, Florida now has a coach that's a dead man walking. You know, his papers have been officially served. He's leaving the program, but he's going to finish this out. So, you know, that's kind of, I don't know what that really says for the program and what you're going to look at from them, because I was kind of banking on them being able to take out Florida State for the last game of the season. That the players, you know, from all indication, had never lost faith or hope in what Muschamp was able to do. So maybe they can rally around the coach and bring them that final game victory. That would be bittersweet, because that would make them bowl eligible as well. So, but you know, they had a crushing loss this week to Steve Spurrier and the South Carolina Gamecocks. He went down to Florida and did everything he could do to get that South Carolina program to their win. And guys, what did you think of that and the news coming out of Florida this week?
Well, it was kind of a fitting end to, well, I guess the end of the truly here, since it's going to finish out the string here and coach the rest of the season. But as far as the nail in the coffin game, it was kind of fitting. I mean, all they have to do is execute a punt. Well, really twice. They have to execute a field goal, a chip shot field goal, or execute a punt. You know, two fairly simple plays, and if they can just execute one of them, they've got to win. You know, all of a sudden he's got two pretty big SEC East wins, and, you know, who knows? Maybe he's able to save his job, especially if he goes in and beats Florida State. And they get the field goal blocks. They get the punt blocks. They've been playing great defense all day, so even after the punt was blocked, you thought, well, they might stiffen up and keep them out. South Carolina goes down and scores, and then the overtime was just completely no contest. In many ways, it was not even all that shocking, because that's just kind of how the Muschamp regime has gone. But at the same time, you were just kind of sitting there watching, thinking to yourself, I cannot believe what I'm seeing here. I cannot believe they're finding a way to blow this. And I don't know, to me, it was just the fitting nail in the coffin for the way that whole giant cluster of a program has been under Will Muschamp.
Yeah, I think the timing of it is a little surprising. I kind of expected them to wait, you know, give the can, we'll do a review at the end of the season sort of response. But, you know, Florida's Florida, and they think, you know, have certain errors about themselves, so I guess they, you know, felt that was the best move for them. And it's been kind of up and down. I can't imagine the emotional roller coaster for Muschamp, because at the beginning of the season he starts on the hot seat, and then, you know, kind of goes up and down throughout the season. And then after the Georgia win, some people were kind of maybe saying that he had saved his job or bought him another year, and then he goes and blows this game. And I saw one stat that said, I can't remember the exact number, something around South Carolina had in that last minute and a half about a 13% chance of victory or something, and they came back and, you know, of course, you know what happened. But that's just kind of, like Britton said, the way Muschamp's Gators have gone. When they need the offense, they haven't been there, so.
You know, in some ways, though, I'd like to hear from honest Florida fans. I do wonder if they're a little bit, you're never glad to lose a game, obviously, but I do wonder if they're a little bit glad that they just went ahead and got this loss out of the way, because, like I kind of mentioned earlier, if he does win that and he does find a way to beat Florida State, which I think is entirely possible even now, even with a lame duck coach, you know, beating Georgia, beating South Carolina, beating Tennessee, beating Florida State, is that enough for Foley to be like, okay, maybe I should keep him around? You know, there was some staff turnover. Things are headed in the right direction. And how many Florida fans really believe, you know, if he had won that game and that scenario had played out, that Muschamp was the guy? I kind of think that most honest Florida fans would be like, you know, I hate that we lost, but I'm kind of glad that we just got this out of the way. Now everyone knows we're one of the top five jobs in the country, and let's go get a good coach. I wonder what their reaction would be to that.
Yeah, what's funny about this, though, is that the fans feel one way. I think the players at Florida feel another. I mean, from every report I'm hearing, the players still love playing for him. It wasn't a matter of the team giving up on the coach. They might not have executed the way everybody wanted them to on the field, but they've not given up on the coach, or he's not lost the team as so many coaches that are in his position have done in the past. He's been able to keep that team rallied around what he's thought. So in that way, I thought it was strange. You know, the loss basically did seal his fate as far as what could happen in the SEC. But, you know, up until the blocked, like you said, blocked field goal, blocked punt, they were in contention to really have a play at the SEC East. And with that loss, you know, that disappeared, and then so did the season for and career at Florida for Muschamp. But I would like to see nothing else than Muschamp take that Florida Gator team to it's at Florida State this year, is it not? I'd have to go back and look, but I think it's a yeah, it's at Florida State. You know, I love nothing more than them to take that short little trip and put an end to that run. I watched that Miami game, and all of a sudden Miami just started playing tight. And I know they're not an SEC game, but they have such implications on what might happen, especially after the Alabama-Mississippi State game, that it deserves being talked about. It's that, you know, Miami, by every indication, outplayed Florida State for the first three quarters. And then all of a sudden they got tight. They weren't playing the same way they needed to, and Florida State does what Florida State has done time and time and time again. Found a way to win in the second half, and you know, that's a testament to that program for them never to give up and do what they've done. It's just, it's frustrating as someone who would like to see them not in the playoff picture, and that might be selfish on my part, but I'm not a big fan of Jameis Winston. I'm becoming less of a fan of the whole coaching staff and the way everything is being handled down there is just ridiculous, in my opinion. You know, whether he's guilty or not, that's beside the point. You shouldn't be having those type of allegations continually happening at a program like that. And it's just not the way that you want to have a program that's potentially competing for the national championship. You know, I wouldn't want that. As a fan, I wouldn't want to be rooting for my team to know that there could be a blemish there. In the character of those men, and let's face it, there's lots of character flaws in college football players, but that's a whole other subject that we're not going to go off on a tangent. But you know, back to Florida, they have a chance the way their defense can play. If they don't make mistakes, they can beat Florida State. So, you know, it's going to be exciting to see what happens there and see if Florida State, or if Florida can muster the rallying cry around Coach Muschamp to do that in the final game. But let's move on. An
epic way to go out.
Yeah, it would be an awesome way to go out. And it would only help his chances of landing another job, which I think he'll get a coordinator's job next year. He won't be out of the ranks long, as good as he is with that defense. That defense, for everything that it is still a top-notch defense down at Florida.
Well, to me, so, that's probably the more interesting storyline than who's going to be the Florida coach. It's which SEC school with a horrible defense this year is going to get Muschamp. I feel like it's a three-way race between Auburn, A&M, and South Carolina, don't you all?
Yeah, but I think Spurrier has already kind of debunked that, so maybe you feel stupid enough to know about you.
Oh, Spurrier's already come out and said he's keeping his guy. I hadn't seen that.
Well, he said that we, you know, kind of the coach speak, if we have a coach now, and we'll address all that at the end of the season. So he didn't necessarily come right out and deny it. But, you know, and he may end up going with it. It's hard to tell with these coaches. You can never tell. But I'm not sure how successful even Muschamp would be at an A&M or Auburn. And, yeah, it's an ongoing discussion of how these spread offenses aren't good for their defenses, because you can have, I mean, it's not that they don't have the players. They have five stars littered all over the defensive side of the field. They're just on the field so much that talent doesn't show up because, you know, eventually they're going to get tired. Eventually they're going to make mistakes. So I'm not even sure if Muschamp will have the kind of success that those fan bases will expect when he comes in.
That's definitely a fair point. I mean, that is the ongoing debate. You know, Ellis Johnson was a pretty good defensive coordinator coming in, and he can't seem to get it going at Auburn. So that's a good point. Muschamp may look for a team that's a little bit more of a not that hurry-up, vroom-vroom offense so that he can augment his defensive numbers a little bit.
Yeah, and that's always a hang-up I have with recruiting. I'm always dumbfounded as why the top-tier linebackers, top-tier defensive backs want to go to those schools, because they don't. I mean, they look good individually, I guess, but the collective whole of those defenses statistically are not what I would think they would want to be a part of. So you would think, you know, in Alabama or even in Arkansas, where you have an offense that's going to try and control the clock or whatever, is more, you would think that would be more attractive. But I guess we're talking about 17, 18-year-old kids, and they're not worried about that probably. But
yeah, you know, from the A&M standpoint, though, I mean, now you're looking at a defense that at the beginning of the season had some positives to it. As the season moved on, you saw them get wore down, get exposed a little more. But now you're looking at 3 years worth of that. So you know, next year they're going to be a different defense than they were this year. And that's going to last even further. And then you get a really defensive-minded coach like Muschamp there. You know, there's an opportunity. I think that would be even fitting for someone that's a fan of the SEC East to see Muschamp go over to South Carolina. And no matter what Spurrier says, that would be, extremely that revenge factor type of thing. You know, when Joker Phillips left Kentucky and ended up at Florida for a while, it's like, really? We're going to have to play him every year? You know, it's a Kentucky fan. And yeah, so, you know, South Carolina, with the whole Spurrier history at Florida, then go back and get Muschamp, and then to come back and beat him again, you know, maybe next year, there would be some justice, you know, revenge type of things that can occur there. And I'm looking at it strictly from a fan's perspective there on that side of it. But let's move on to another program, and I just mentioned Kentucky. You know, on the other side of that ball, Tennessee has found a quarterback that has been able to open up that offense, that's been able to find a run game, that's been able to open up passing lanes and become I would say an above average. I wouldn't say he was an excellent passer, because you know, even watching that game, there were a number of misses that he threw that should have been wide open passes. But you know, Tennessee had even with all of that, they just destroyed Kentucky. Kentucky's defense has fallen in the ranks of Texas A&M. They've become non-existent over the last month, and I'm glad they've got a week off this week. But as a Kentucky fan, offensively they're able to do things. So, but that defense is getting beat up, getting beat down. They're not carrying themselves the way they were. They're not attacking the way they did at the beginning of the season, and it's a different level of competition. But you would expect more. I mean, look what they were able to hold on to against Mississippi State, you know, just 3 or 4 weeks ago. Held them to, you know, 14 points, and it was close till very late in that contest. And so they have the ability to play that defense. It just has to show up on Kentucky's side one more time against the Louisville program in 2 weeks, or they're going to miss out on all this extra practice that a bowl game can give. Whether they win or lose the bowl game, I think from a Kentucky's growth standpoint, doesn't matter. What needs to happen for them is they need to find a way to win this game in 2 weeks against Louisville so that they can get this extra practice time, because they are a very, very young program. They're going to need that going forward. Anything you all want to add about that?
I think you kind of alluded to the issue. It's pretty similar to Arkansas in the other division, where it's not, you know, maybe a matter of depth and experience this late in the season, where some people are getting worn down. They might have, you know, have had some injuries. So you get into this brutal SEC schedule where You might have a decent team, and at the beginning of the year you look good and you just kind of get worn down so that you can't really hang for an entire season. But if Stoops continues to recruit the way that he has and get his players in his system, then you know next year and the year after that it will become less of an issue because obviously the young players you're talking about will need more experience and they'll have quality backups behind them as well.
So I'll flip it to the other side and touch on the Tennessee thing. And we've touched on it before since Dobbs took over. But, man, Tennessee fans have got to be wondering, what if? I mean, they are a completely different team with him behind center. I don't know, Shane, if you've noticed the Tennessee fans here in town. There's a different level of confidence from those guys than there has been in the last 6 or 7 years.
And all you got to say right there?
Yeah.
They're back to the way it used to be, yeah. They can win every game. They're the SEC's champs. Better watch out.
They're starting to gain some confidence. And, I mean, it looks like they've got their guy. You know, we were a little hesitant of saying that after the Alabama game and even after the I forget who they played now, but after the game, as the South Carolina game. Because we saw him come in last year and have some good moments and then completely regress and get worse week after week. But that doesn't seem to be happening now. And, you know, at the college level, when you have that run threat with the quarterback, it's been proven time and time again, you don't have to be a great passer when you have that run threat. I mean, Blake Sims is doing it right now. Dak Prescott does it. When you add that element in, it just opens up so many more things for the offense. And, I mean, they just look like a completely different team. You know?
What amazes me on the Tennessee side, though, is how bad was he in summer ball to not get that starting position?
Yeah, that's amazing to me, too, because that's what you hear is that he doesn't practice well, and then somehow the light just comes on when the bright lights are on. But I cannot believe that he... I mean, he is clearly the best option they have. I just cannot believe that he was that terrible in practice that they felt like... I mean, they were going to redshirt him. They were not going to play him. If Worley never gets hurt, we're not even talking about Dobbs. It's just
no, you're right. And Tennessee would be sitting here probably with another two more losses on their resume right now if that wasn't the case, that if Worley was still healthy. It's a totally and Peterman was as bad as he was.
Oh yeah, and Peterman. I mean, it makes you want to get a pass somehow to go watch practice because I got to see what this guy does that's so terrible in practice that they were scared to put him in because he's clearly the best option. It's not even close.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder if it's you know coaches kind of having their guy in their head that they see in a different light. I mean, kind of go back to Florida, you see that where you have. Driscoll for the first half of the season, and they switched to Treon Harris, and they were a different team. I mean, you see them offensively were much better with him, and it's kind of like, you know, you get paid millions of dollars to figure this out. You would think that you could tell that, you know, Dobbs is better than Peterman or Treon Harris is better than Driscoll or whatever, but I mean, you know, I wonder how much of that is just coaches kind of have their guy in their head and they stick with him almost – to a fault.
That's a good point. That could be it. I don't know. But, you know, it's a different program in Tennessee. And you know, I'll sit here and say hats off. They've got a very good opportunity to win one of the next two games they've got to be bowl eligible. I know they host Missouri this week, and then they end up with Vanderbilt. So, you know, they are in the driver's seat to become bowl eligible after their impressive performance against Kentucky. So, next up, another impressive performance. We'll talk about that. And that's on the east side of the ball of the SEC as well, and that's Georgia. You know, this is the kind of game I was expecting at the beginning when we looked at, you know, this matchup when we did our previews, Britton. You know, we both said that this is where Georgia wants to exact revenge. It shouldn't be close. Georgia will be a much better team than Auburn. There for a while in the middle of the season, those roles reversed. Auburn was the better team. at times, and Georgia was not. They looked lost at times, and then in the last couple of weeks they found a direction, have had continued focus, and really just put it to Auburn. You know, it was, where did that Auburn offense go that was so impressive? I mean, even still, you expect them to get a couple of touchdowns, maybe three, not the score that you were going to end up seeing there, where they just managed one touchdown the entire game.
Yeah, that had to be the shocker of the weekend, to see a Gus Malzahn offense struggle the way they did. And against a Georgia team who we all saw Florida running a very similar offense to what Auburn runs with Treon Harris in there, only not doing it as well as Auburn does it, just running up and down the field on Georgia. And, you know, I think we made the comment, does Georgia have any prayer of stopping Auburn when they have the ball after what we just saw Florida do to them? And so, you know, I wasn't surprised that Georgia was able to pound it down their throat. And by the way, Nick Chubb, man, I guess Georgia finds the tailback, don't they? But, you know, that part wasn't surprising. I expected it to be that way on both sides, where they're just swapping scores. You know, Auburn comes right out the gate and goes down the field like a hot knife through butter, and you're like, okay, that's kind of what I expected. And then that was it. That Georgia just clamped down. Auburn could not do anything. It was shocking. And they did what we always talk about, is turning Nick Marshall into a quarterback. But, you know, we always talk about that, but it's a lot, clearly a lot easier said than done, because so few teams have been able to do it. But when you turn him into a guy that has to throw the ball and beat you in the pocket, they're just not a very good team. It's just that no one's really been able to do that. So that was definitely the shocker of the week. And Georgia, I'll tell you what, as an Alabama fan, you got to be rooting for Missouri to make it through, because Georgia can beat anybody in the country when their head is right. You just never know what Georgia team you're going to get.
Yeah. Go on, Jim.
Go ahead, Shane.
No, go on.
Well, I was just going to say that Mark Richt is one of those coaches. You know, there's a handful of them in around the country that always seem to, you know, they have the moniker of doing less with more, where he has 10 win seasons every year. But there's always those two games every season that are just totally opposite sides of the coin, where he has a game like against Florida where they just totally come out flat and get blown out, seems like every year, and then a game where you think, okay, maybe this team is not what we thought preseason, and then they come out and surprise you on the other side of the coin and blow out a good team like Auburn. You know, I think about like a Bob Stoops at Oklahoma usually has something like that. And the fans get frustrated, and that brings me back to the thought of, not that they're going to get rid of Mark Richt, but I wonder what an honest Georgia fan thinks if Richt has reached his ceiling there, or if he's ever going to take them, you know, to a national championship, or if they're just going to be one of those top 10 teams that always win 10 games but nothing more.
Britton?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think that they would definitely echo that opinion, Jimmy. I mean, I know I saw some of that on Twitter of people after the Florida game just being like, I love Rick. He's a great guy. He's clearly a good coach, but I'm so sick of this. This is what we are. We're always going to do this. So, but it's, you know, it's a funny perspective. I think if you ask most Tennessee fans right now, they would say, hey, I'll take a coach that can get me 9-10 wins every year, even if we do lose a couple of bad games.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Butterball right there. It wasn't, though, without a loss on Georgia's side, with Gurley going out with the torn ACL, it seems. You know, to come back from the suspension, everybody thought, you know, hey, this works out perfect for Georgia. Gurley's going to be able to set out through a brunt of this, be able to be healthier for Georgia at the end, to help improve his chances and be strong in the NFL, and then he comes up with this injury right here. It's a big loss for both Georgia and for Gurley. But you know, the good news for Georgia on that front is at least they've got Sonny Michel and Nick Chubb. So you know, they might not miss a beat on the running game, other than he is impressive and he's still a workhorse, and I don't care how much you think that he won't be missed. it was just an extra weapon that you had if you were Georgia that you wish you could have going into the SEC championship if they can make it. But,
well, yeah, and he's also a really good kick returner. I mean, how incredible is that when the first time he touches the ball, you know, the first time he's dressed in 4 weeks, he takes it to the house on the kickoff. It wound up not counting, of course. But, I mean, yeah, it's a huge loss. Chubb is amazing. But to have a 1-2 punch like they had,
And Britton, you're right. That's an excellent point that as much as we talk about his running game, he's just as explosive as the punt returner. For Georgia and can be missed there as well. So
and it's also just sad. I mean, you don't want to see a guy like that, you know, who's just a great SEC player to see it end like that. Just the whole way this season went down for him. It's just not cool. Kind of sucks.
Hopefully yeah, like well you said, it's bad for Georgia because yeah, Chubb has been great, but also he's a true freshman now. Running back is a you know, they say one of the easier transitions from high school to college if you're physically ready, but you hate to think that maybe a game or a moment comes along when his inexperience comes back to bite him, you know, maybe a fumble or a penalty or a missed block or something like that, whereas you know, if you had an upperclassman in Gurley in there, you may not have that moment. And then, yeah, for Gurley, it's just bad. You look at, you know, what happened with Marcus Lattimore, a similar situation where probably could have played in the league after their freshman year, but because of the rules, they end up jeopardizing their career. And I'm not sure that if you talk to them or were close with them, that they might want to go back and do it differently. I mean, they may have really enjoyed their college time and wouldn't change it at all, or maybe they would kind of pull a Clowney and kind of sort of limp through their final year to make sure that nothing happens to them. I don't know. It's an issue that the NFL and the NCAA is going to have to look at coming up, I think, sooner than they hope.
Yeah, well, I think if you ask them, and they would be honest about their experience, but they'd also, if you got them to be truly honest, is the rehab is where the hell comes in. It's not so much the injury, it's just rehabbing back to get that knee or that whatever injury it is, but especially when you're talking about an MCL or ACL, to rehab that in such a way that so you're ready to go again at the beginning of the season, that's pretty intense and not a comfortable way to spend your next 9 months or 8 months to get yourself ready for everything. Even if you're going to try to be ready for the combine, that's even worse. You know, it's even shorter. So, you know, there's a lot of brutal rehab that's going to go into that on Gurley's part, but I think his college experience and his time at Georgia, if you could get him to be honest, you know, he's going to have to do some compartmentalization there to say that one's good and one's bad. Let's see. The next game I have on my list is those Missouri Tigers. You know, it's just I talked about at the beginning of this podcast how they just methodically find ways to come in and you know, that was a pretty entertaining game. A&M had some chances, but Missouri holds off for a touchdown victory over Texas A&M at College Station. That was a game where last week I thought that A&M had a legitimate shot, especially after their performance the week prior, and to be in College Station for them to come away with that victory. But it wasn't in the cards.
Yeah, that one actually wound up being the best game of the weekend, which I don't think anybody would have predicted that going into the weekend. And this was the first time, you know, at some point we've got to give Missouri credit, I guess. I keep saying I just don't think they're that good, yet they keep winning. But this was the first time that they actually looked like a good football team. You know, I mean, they were making stops defensively. They were making plays offensively. They had a running back that almost goes for 200 yards. This was the first time that I was like, okay, that's a pretty good team out there. It wasn't one of those 17-7 ball games where they find a way to scrap out some turnovers in the fourth quarter or whatever. It was kind of a different feel. I think you have to say that we know the A&M defense is bad. they also didn't have their best player, Myles Garrett, who is a legitimate difference maker for them. And I'm sure that played into Missouri's hand to be able to make some plays without him out there. But, again, we can't just keep looking over Missouri because they keep finding a way to win. I really thought A&M had momentum after that Auburn game. They're coming back to Kyle Field. I really thought they were going to handle their business here. But then that's also kind of been the oddity of the Aggies. They've had all their big wins have been on the road. They joined the SEC. They've not been able to win these games at home. And that trend continues.
Yeah, and I think you kind of hit it on the head of where it's time to start giving Missouri some credit. And I hate, you know, living in the Kansas City area, I hate to do that because I've grown to loathe them just by meeting their fans because they think that they are more than what they are. But you know, they're kind of like an Auburn team to a lesser degree, where they just continue to find ways to win whatever it takes. Now they do, you know, still have some bad losses. I mean, obviously the Indiana loss this year, where you just kind of look and say, you know, you're definitely not on that next level, and you just wonder maybe if it's a benefit of them being in the East that is, you know, still a quality division, but nowhere near the level of competition that the West is. And if things were maybe different and they had gotten the line differently, they could easily be, you know, not even a bowl eligible team. I'm not sure. So I think they have a benefit of the schedule and catching teams at the right time. And but you know, give them credit, they're doing what it takes to win. And you know, they've got the East where they want it. And I'm hoping that they win this week so that we can play spoiler the day after Thanksgiving. But
yeah, they've still got two tough games ahead of them. I mean, they've got Tennessee, and like you said, they finished Thanksgiving weekend with your Razorbacks. So even though they've continued to win, you watch the performance they've had at times, you know, that Missouri program can come back out and be beatable. But you know, they control their own destiny. Georgia's done with their SEC schedule. So it's all up to what can Missouri do over the next few weeks. Can they keep finding ways to win? And we'll get to see that coming up. All right. So I saved the last two games for you two. Who wants to go first? Who wants to brag about their performance, the Razorbacks or the Tide? You all fight it out.
Well, I guess we could talk about ours first and save Britain's for last, since they have, you know, the rankings on their side.
Fair enough.
I mean, it's been a long time coming, basically. I mean, it's been... You look back to halfway through last season, there's been so many games that we were competitive in, had a chance to win, and just couldn't pull it out for whatever reason. And so now we've kind of hopefully gotten over that hump where the players have learned how to win again and how to hang on in the fourth quarter and make the plays when they need to, and moving forward with Ole Miss and Missouri, I really think that they're going to turn the corner, the Razorbacks, and that we're going to win these next two, get to a bowl game and hopefully get a favorable matchup there and get those extra practices and maybe end the season at 8-5, which would be far better than most people expected. Fairly close to what I kind of had hoped for, but you know, I'm excited. I mean, who better to break the streak than the LSU Tigers?
No, it was an impressive performance. You know, all season long we said on this podcast, and I think everybody has said this, that as good as Arkansas has played, they're going to beat somebody in the SEC. And you know, the way it's going, you've got a chance to win a couple more now that you've got that monkey off your back with the Arkansas Razorbacks program. Really strong. Just what to me is not, I mean, I don't know where to go with this, but I mean, your bowl chances now have become much greater. You got one more win and you become bowl eligible. Is that right, Jimmy?
Right. Yeah, sitting at 5-5 right now. So
you know, you got matchups with Missouri and Ole Miss. So, I mean, neither one of them are cupcakes, but, you know, both programs that you can beat. Ole Miss is coming off of a bye. But, you know, if you can win one of those two games, all of a sudden, Arkansas now becomes bowl eligible. So, you know, those things we talked about a couple weeks ago on the podcast as far as the ability for such a large number of SEC teams to become bowl eligible really is starting to take shape. You know, there's just one or two teams right now that might not be bowl eligible. And so to have 14 teams and to have that many teams bowl eligible at the end of the season, I know there's still two more weeks to play and some wins are going to have to happen for some programs. But they're all seeming to put themselves in a position to control that and give themselves the opportunity to go to a bowl game. And to me, I sat here and I listened to everybody. They're not defending. They're attacking the SEC for, you know, when you're looking at the championship playoff system and talking about how weak our schedule is outside of conference. But I still believe that when you sit there and you have to beat each other up for 8 weeks, week after week after week in SEC play, who cares if you've got a set of cupcakes? And who cares if it's week 12 of the SEC slate, which is what we have coming up now? I dare to say that if you put our in-conference schedule against anybody else's, we're going to win. We're going to win that battle as far as the strength of schedule goes. So just because we have some lesser opponents and that are non-fives, that's irrelevant in my opinion, and should not play a huge factor in the fact that we should get punished as a conference because we play a weaker out-of-conference schedule. Because if you look at everybody except for, I think, two programs, we all have played a top five conference opponent as one of our four non-conference games. So you've got to put them in there somewhere. Now, I will agree, and I'm going off on a tangent, I'm sorry, guys, but I will agree that to some degree they could do a better job scheduling so that we don't have eight games or how many ever cupcake games we have this week all falling at the same time. Because how many weeks did we sit here and say the 6:15 and the 6:30 Central Standard Time game are all three games we want to watch at the exact same time? And if you had one of those other opponents that you got scattered in there, now you're only down to two. So I'm okay with dispersing that a little more, even some of the stuff that's heavy laden in the beginning of the season. And I think that might happen. I think that'll happen before the SEC goes to nine conference games, because if you do that and you disperse those cupcakes a little more evenly throughout your season, now all of a sudden you have better programming that gets offered to the fans and to the advertisers throughout the entire season, and that makes your brand even more valuable than it currently is. So I see that happening more than I see them going to the non-conference games. I know I've heard some spatterings of people complaining about that this week, and that's just my two cents on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up an interesting point, is that it's not like most of the SEC teams out-of-conference schedule had zero quality opponents. I mean, yes, you look at Arkansas, we played a Texas Tech team that ends up being horrible, but before the season they were one of the trendy picks to be kind of an up-and-coming, maybe in the top 25 program with their hot new coach and his cool shades. And then you've got LSU playing Wisconsin, who is second best, if not arguably the best team in the Big Ten, and Alabama played, who was it, Clemson, Britain?
West Virginia,
that's right. Clemson is, but, you know, I mean, it's not like we haven't played quality opponents. And every school, there's probably...
Yeah, well, and while you're talking about that, look at the east side. Kentucky plays Louisville. Georgia plays Georgia Tech. Florida plays Florida State. South Carolina plays Clemson. Right. Who am I missing?
Georgia played Clemson, too.
Tennessee, who'd they play this year? They always play somebody tough.
Oklahoma.
So,
yeah. So they've all got one.
you start looking at adding all that in. There's a couple in there that need to step up to the plate. I think Ole Miss, did they play anybody? I know Mississippi State didn't. But by and large, the SEC played quality opponents. And like Blair said on this podcast, and I don't hear a single talking head, and I'm included with this, so I hear one talking head talking about this. But I don't see one of them out there talking about the fact that you can't just schedule a Power 5 conference right now for next season. It's these things are put out. Look at the announcements that have happened over the last couple of weeks for some of these Power 5 conferences. These things are done 2, 3, 4 years in advance. For you to all of a sudden say, okay, we're now going to a Power 5 conference and we need you to play one, it's just not a matter of flipping a switch and all of a sudden you've got one on your schedule. There's a lot that goes into it. I know Mississippi State has that trouble because nobody wants to go to Starkville. And so it's not fair for Mississippi State to say, well, we're always going to play that game on the road. So it's very difficult for them to get a Power 5 to play a home and home. So there's lots of challenges to this that's not being considered and not being talked about. I don't think it's the fact that the SEC or certain schools have avoided the fact. I think it's just a part of it is they just can't get these things scheduled the way they want to. And I think that will change over time. But to hear them stand on their soapbox and say, you know, these are the reasons why the SEC doesn't need to have two teams in, or that's why I really don't think they should be the number one team in the country, or the number four team against Mississippi State, that's all just a bunch of baloney.
Yeah, and, you know, I've got two last points about the schedules, but, I mean, you look at, you could probably count on one hand the number of teams that play more than one quality opponent outside of conference. It's not like there's really too many other teams that are doing what other fan bases want SEC teams to do. It's just kind of we are successful and they're envious, and, you know, don't want to give credit to the in-conference schedule for whatever reason, because teams do kind of cannibalize each other. But it's not like there's but a handful of teams that play more than one marquee opponent outside of conference anyway. And on the flip side of that, if they were the top conference and didn't have to do that, you know, you're kidding yourself if you think Ohio State or Oregon or somebody like that would play the kind of schedule that they demand of SEC teams if they didn't have to. They have to play catch-up because their conference is weak. Now, the Pac-12 is a little different, but the Big Ten is a joke. And so you have teams, who was it that beat Minnesota 2 weeks ago? TCU maybe, or Kansas State or somebody, and they try to hang their hat on that where they play a Power 5 conference team. And, I mean, it's Minnesota. So what is that really worth?
Yeah, I think some of this falls on deaf ears, and we understand that some of the trials and tribulations and the justification on our side, but nobody wants to listen to that. They put their blinders on and talk about, you know, try to find ways to punch holes in how strong that the SEC is. And while we're talking about the strength of the SEC, Britton, you know, your Alabama Crimson Tide is the number one team in all of college football. They control their own destiny, and they did so by, you know, basically taking an electrified offense of Mississippi State and really cooling it down.
Yeah, that was an impressive defensive performance, to say the least. And it sounds interesting to say that if you just look at the stats, because Mississippi State still wound up with north of 400 total yards, but a lot of that had to do with just the situation of the game, the way things kind of broke down. They were able to manhandle the offensive line, those defensive linemen and linebackers in, with their at least two deep at every position, and you know, they turned Dak Prescott into a quarterback. The running game was not there. I thought Mississippi State was a little bit weird with some of their play calling in the first half. It seemed like by the end of the first quarter, everyone could tell that the quarterback power plays weren't working, and they just seemed to be stubborn about keeping attempting to do that. And I guess it was because they didn't feel like they could allow Prescott to just try to win the game from his pocket. You know, for Prescott, that was, he had some good moments, but then he also basically took himself out of the Heisman race with three turnovers, all inside the red zone, all at big moments in that game. You know, the offense, that the Alabama Jekyll and Hyde offense being great at home and terrible on the road didn't really continue in this game. The offense was not great. They had another terrible third quarter where Lane Kiffin just seems to forget that it's okay to just turn around and hand the ball off sometimes. You know, I think they had three straight three and outs in the third quarter, had the, ran like six or seven offensive plays, and Mississippi State has the ball for the whole time. But that defense just wasn't bending, wasn't breaking. And Mississippi State didn't embarrass themselves by any means, but it also wasn't as close as it looks if you just look at the score and then look at the box.
Well, I think it was. I think, but you said it. Every time in the second half, especially, they were getting a great drive, there was a turnover. I mean, when you have three turnovers, like you said, inside the red zone, you know, it's hard to score a lot of points when you turn around and give the ball back to your opponent. And so while I say that you all studded the electricity that Mississippi State had, yeah, you're right, they had over 400 yards. But every time it got to the red zone and you guys needed to tighten up and make a play, something happened and you all were able to make a play. So even though it was a five-point game, and it was a lot closer, I think, than even that, in my opinion, than what the score shows is, but you as an Alabama program found a way to get the ball when you needed it to control your own destiny.
Well, and Blake Sims just continues to amaze for a guy who literally no one who pays attention to college football before the season started thought had a shot in the world to be the starting quarterback. And outside of Amari Cooper, he's the offensive MVP this season. And, yes, he definitely has limitations, but in big moments when they need a drive or they need a first-down conversion, and he just finds a way to get it done. And it's really awesome to watch a guy who really doesn't seem to have any business being a quarterback at this level, being the best player on the team that is loaded with talent everywhere. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, you hit it right on the head. That's the big difference in that game is the quarterback play, because you have a guy, Dak Prescott, who had, that was his Heisman moment, where he's been the front runner, but he hasn't really had, you know, some people look to the Arkansas game where he gave them a come from behind victory there, but really, if he would have showed up at the Alabama game and beaten a team as established, a program that's as established as Nick Saban's Crimson Tide, then, you know, the vote would have been a runaway. And he kind of fell apart in that moment, where you look back in the past to like a Johnny Manziel or a Cam Newton, as much as I hate to mention them ever. But you look at them, and when they needed to make a play, they would. And that was the difference. Dak Prescott, like you said, would turn the ball over in the red zone and couldn't come up with that. The play that they needed, where if, you know, a couple series may have gone a different way, then you might be talking about something different. But I for one, am not necessarily surprised, because Mississippi State's in that position where, even though they've been number one for a while or number two for so many weeks, you still kind of expect a game like that where they lose and knock themselves out of that top spot. Until they prove you otherwise. At least for me, I was, you know, not surprised at all by the outcome, and totally expected them to lose to Alabama.
And as we look to the next couple of weeks, you know, in my opinion, even though that was his chance to have his Heisman moment, I don't think he's out of the race.
No.
A lot has to depend on what happens in the Iron Bowl and the Egg Bowl. You know, if somehow Auburn finds a way to win and Prescott has a tremendous performance at the Egg Bowl, well, all of a sudden, you know, that's a whole other discussion. That's his Heisman moment. So it's not completely over, in my opinion, for what he can or can't do in that Heisman race. But as we do look to this week's matchups, it's a good thing that we have the week that we have, because we spent an hour talking about a small slate of games from last week. So if we had a full set of games to talk about this week, this would probably be a two-hour podcast. So lucky for you listeners that we have the week that we have, because I don't think there's anything to talk about Eastern Kentucky at Florida. I don't think there's anything to talk about South Alabama out South Carolina. Charleston Southern at Georgia. Western Carolina at Alabama. Samford at Auburn. So that leaves three games. Ole Miss at Arkansas. Jimmy, tell us a little bit about that preview as you're looking at that Arkansas program and their chances to win again.
Well, like I said earlier, I think we've got a great chance of winning. I expect us to win, hope to win. It's a little bit of homerism, but at the same time, I just think, like you said earlier, I think we've got that monkey off our back. And even the preview before the season, this was one of the games that this and Missouri both were two of the games I looked at before the season and thought we had a good chance to, you know, pull a victory out there and surprise some folks and make a bowl game. So it really just depends, kind of good bow, bad bow. With Treadwell's situation, that helps us as far as bad bow showing up, because they really rely on the short passing game, the timing routes, and I don't think that Bo Wallace is somebody you kind of want to have to look to make that game-winning drive without Treadwell, especially. So I think the key for us is to just do what we've been doing, play great defense like we have the last few weeks, which is probably the biggest surprise of the season for me, the way our defense has played. But just control the clock, run the ball, keep their offense off the field, and we should be good to go. I haven't seen the line of whether we're, you know, what that stands at, but I expect to win. I won't be surprised if we lose, because they are a good team and their defense is pretty legit, but I expect a W for the Hogs to get bowl eligible.
I'll tell you, I think one of the interesting storylines here is Mississippi State fans have to be rooting hard for Ole Miss in this ball game, because basically outside of Auburn beating Alabama in the Iron Bowl, I really think the only chance Mississippi State has to get into that Final Four is for Ole Miss to be a two-loss team, a top 10. I think right now they're 8 in the college football playoff poll. To be a top 8 team, and for Mississippi State to have a top 8 win, because if Alabama wins out, Mississippi State is going to be sitting at home watching Ohio State play in a conference championship, watching Pac-12 teams play in conference championships. You know, all these teams, the Big 12 teams won't have conference championships, but they will play on championship weekend. They're going to be sitting there watching all these teams that are right now behind them have a chance to jump them, where they've kind of got to rest on their laurels, and you look back and say, oh, by the way, Mississippi State has a better win than any of these teams down the stretch here. So that's an interesting storyline to me. I also think from the Ole Miss perspective, this is the first real game we will have seen them without Laquon Treadwell. They played a cupcake the week after Auburn. So, you know, what do we really expect from them? They're banged up on both sides of the ball now. Don't know 100% what we're going to get from them. And like Jimmy said, if you put this game on Bo Wallace's shoulders, that's advantage Arkansas to me.
Yeah, and you hit on something, and we talked about this at the very beginning of the season when we had Cole Hodges on talking about Ole Miss. One thing he said is they're not real deep. You know, and you just mentioned they're banged up on both sides of the ball, both offensively and defensively now. And so how is that going to play out as you move forward and you play a program like Arkansas who's going to line up, put a helmet on a helmet, and beat you right there in the trenches? That's going to be a tough fought game for Ole Miss. Then they're going to have to turn around and back that up with the Egg Bowl. So they've got an extremely tough 2 weeks worth of matchups to face to have a shot. As a Mississippi State, I don't see, or as someone on the outside looking in, I don't see how, even if Ole Miss does win, and they get a top eight, and Mississippi State beats them, I don't see how they're in the discussion for a Final Four with the weight that you're hearing everybody talk about conference championships. I still think they're going to be on the outside of the Final Four looking in. They're going to have to rely on Auburn. That's who they're rooting for right now, and they're rooting for Auburn next week. Not this week, but they're rooting for Auburn next week to beat Alabama. And then they can take care of business themselves. And that's the way I see Mississippi State, because as much as I think the SEC deserves to have two teams in, I don't see the committee giving them two teams in, at least with what they've talked about as far as the weight and everything they're going to put into winning your conference championship. I think that that's going to leave a Mississippi State on the outside looking in, regardless of the outcome of a win or a loss there. One other game of note, and you know, I would have said this is one that we have to bypass, and that's Mississippi State Vanderbilt. I still think Mississippi State's going to roll, but you know, that Vanderbilt program, now that they found a quarterback with McCrary, they are a much improved team. I still don't think they have the weapons or the talent right now to compete against a Mississippi State who's definitely going to have something to prove. They've got the stress of being number one off of their back, but I think that's the only storyline there that warrants consideration. And then we're going to close up shop this week with Missouri at Tennessee. And we already talked a little bit about this game. Missouri's controlling their own destiny right here. And Tennessee has found a new life with Dobbs. That offense can score. That was a tough game last year. I forgot who ended up winning that game or how close that one was at the end. But that was a pretty hard-fought game that Missouri ended up squeaking through on Tennessee last year. And so I'm curious to see how this one shakes out. I'm going to say that Missouri wins this game. But I think this potentially could be the game of the week in the SEC.
Is it at Missouri or at Tennessee?
It's at Tennessee.
Well, like I said earlier, I'll definitely be pulling for Missouri because I want to play spoiler for them. But I mean, like you said, Tennessee's much improved. It could go either way. It's at home in front of 100,000 renewedly confident fans. And at the end of the day, maybe it's just my flawed mentality, but Missouri is still Missouri to me. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they lose. You can't just assume that a team that lost to Indiana is going to beat a team like Tennessee. It just kind of, depends on Tennessee's growth from week to week. If they continue to improve, it'll definitely be a tough game. But, Missouri, I think, we'll pull it out, but it will be much closer than maybe some people expect.
Well, I'll tell you, the A.J. Johnson thing is really bad timing here. It may not be terrible just because Missouri's not a great offense, but Tennessee, you talk about Ole Miss not having depth. Tennessee just does not have depth, and A.J. Johnson was undoubtedly their leader on defense, was probably their best player. Maybe not the most talented player, but certainly the most productive and has been for years. And to lose a guy like that for a game like this, that's, when you have the depth situation that Tennessee has, that's bad. It's beginning to become hard to pick against Missouri because they just seem to find ways to win. But I still like Tennessee in this spot. And maybe it's just that I can't shake the Indiana thing. I don't know. As an Alabama fan, I mentioned earlier, I should be rooting for Missouri because I think that Alabama would disassemble Missouri, whereas Georgia can beat anyone. But as an SEC fan, I find myself not wanting Missouri to represent the East because it looks terrible for the conference to have a team that lost to Indy freaking Anna be a representative in the SEC championship. So I still, as much as they looked better against A&M, I still just have no confidence that this Missouri team is actually good. And like Jimmy said earlier, I think everything about their record has to do with being in the East, a really, really weak East this year. Tennessee's got some magic, some mojo going right now. I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be the game of the week, like Shane said. But I think Tennessee's going to find a way to win, and this is going to be probably you could make the case this will be the biggest win for Butch Jones if they win it, even bigger than the South Carolina win, just because it is finally we're bowl eligible. It's been 7 years to finally get over the hump.
Now, that's something else is they really have something to play for Saturday, is to get that bowl eligibility and with the East the way it is, you know, they're going to be middle of the pack, upper end of the pack potentially as far as records go. In the SEC East, Tennessee will be. So, you know, it's a good thing if you're a Volunteer if they win Saturday. If not, you know, they luckily have one more opportunity the week after against Vanderbilt to try to get there. So that wraps up another week's worth of looks forward and back at the SEC. I want to thank Britton Burton for joining me, Jimmy Penrod for joining me. I think we had a lively discussion. I think lots was discussed. I've enjoyed it. I appreciate you guys coming on week after week, making time, and I appreciate everyone out there listening week after week. So we thank you guys for listening in, and we are going to call this podcast done.